Warning, this podcast contains strong language and immature subject matter. We talk about farts. Listener discretion is advised.
Yes, there never was a glibber fibber or a cuter shooter than Calamity Jane. She could outstalk, outdraw, outride any man in Deadwood City except Wild Bill Hickok.
Only with you killing off them redskins so fast, I was wondering why the government even bothered to send the army.
Calling me a liar again.
I'm a broken-hearted lover. You see in comic books, the only love I ever gave was the love you took with you.
Welcome to the Lonely Hearts Comic Book Podcast, in which four guys talk about romance comics. I'm Siskoid, but I'll likely be called Mike through most of this podcast, because that's my name. And with me are Fern,
hey,
Bass,
hey,
and Marty.
Hello.
Well, this is our third episode, and over the course of this and other episodes, we'll be looking at classic romance comics, but also talking about the great contemporary comic book romances. In episode three, we've selected a special Western romance for you. That's coming up in Romance Comics Theater in a few minutes, but it's also a reason to talk about the intrusion of genre in romance comics. In other words, there are straight-up romance comics, but there are also romances in other genres. All sorts of stories regularly have a romantic subplot, for example. But what about when the scales tip more to the side of romance, romance with genre elements? Marty, you're a horror fan.
Yeah.
What about a romance horror, as opposed to horror romance?
Well, there's always a little bit of romance and horror all the time.
But what about a little bit of horror in romance?
I don't know.
That sounds like a Clive Barker movie, yeah, or book.
Yeah, that's very Clive Barkery, yeah. Romance and horror. I don't know. In comics, I've never... I guess you could see, like, Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing's kind of a romance.
Yeah, that's horror. Yeah. He's in love. A lot of its anchor to humanity's is love.
But in movies, we see it.
Yeah, it's a standard horror trope.
It's a horror trope, but we're talking about a romance where there's horror in it instead. So, like, I don't know, Only Lovers Left Alive?
Yeah.
Would that be a romance first?
Yeah, that's a romance first.
It's a romance first and just happens to
have...
I wasn't there to see it with you guys, but I believe it was It Follows. Would that be...
It Follows. It Follows. It's a creepy fucking horror.
The romance.
I don't remember the romance.
Oh, okay.
Just remember
right.
The horror.
Yeah. It's just tossing it out there.
What was that Swedish film? What was that called? Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In.
That was a cute little kids
romance. That sounds like a porn movie.
Yeah. Let the Right One In. It's about a child vampire.
Okay.
It's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a romance child, first. It just so happens there's a vampire in it.
Yeah, child vampire who's we assume is probably like 100, 300 years old. We don't know. Falls in love with this little kid.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, keeps him in thrall. Anyway.
Yeah.
That would be that would fall under more of like Anne Rice novels or the whole the vampire mythos is more there to complement the actual romances of those books.
Yeah, like
I haven't read
a vampire and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is Dracula a romance first?
Yes, it is actually. Because back then they couldn't write straight up romance novels, so the whole vampirism myth.
Yeah, the Bram Stoker Committee.
writers in general, because you know the political climate, the religious stuff, all that. Back then, that's how they wrote their romance novels. Because what is a vampire? There's fluid exchange, there's penetration, you know. you laugh, but that's what it is.
No, I'm not laughing.
Vampires themselves have the seduction aura.
Because they're basically predators. They're sexual predators.
Exactly.
Well, I wouldn't say that's the only way they could write romance. No. It's the only way they could write sex.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Right. It was a lot. It was an easy way to kind of get their cheeky novels out there, their stories with this vampire as their creature, their great seducer. Because the Bram Stoker's Dracula, that's the whole point. You know, the historical character was a monster. Let's say it. Vlad Tepes was horrible. But the Dracula from Bram Stoker, he was suave, he was debonair, you know, he was a man about town who also, you know, happened to, you know, drain his victims of blood.
But was he in love with Mina Harker or whatever?
I think that's a distinction.
Stoker, the girl, yeah. Mina
Harker.
Mina Harker, pardon.
That's a distinct thing. Like, distinction, he's not in love. The women aren't even in love. It's more of he has his, you know, date rape powers.
He has his concubines and his thralls. So that's but Mina Harker is like.
That's what I mean. I don't think that's romance as much as it is. It's seduction. It's sex. It's
right.
Yeah, and it's predatory.
Jane Eyre. We call them gothic novels, but they were basically horror-ish gothic romance. That's horror. What about great romances in science fiction or in fantasy?
About more modern?
I wish I'd done research before.
Yeah. I wish you'd have told us to actually think about this beforehand.
I think I did, but your internet is off.
I'm going to go more modern, Interstellar, from his face.
Yeah. You're calling Interstellar a romance?
No, well, the whole thing is there are five elements in the world. And love. It's all about love.
Sure. Like Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Is the Fifth Element a romance first?
No.
No. It's a Luc Besson movie. It's an action movie first. But there is a heavy romance angle.
Well, it is the Fifth Element.
Yeah. The Fifth Element is love. Right. Just like Captain Planet.
Spoiler! You know?
Yeah. Yeah, someone's really pissed right now. We spoiled Fifth Element.
A 20-year-old movie. I'm sorry, people.
If you haven't seen the Fifth Element, well, screw you.
Someone is going through Chris Tucker's filmography right now. He's like, God damn it! He's like, Fifth Element was next!
Chris Tucker!
Yeah. Isn't it Chris Tucker?
Come on, man. I'm green.
Of all the people in there, Chris Tucker. Yeah, somebody's
the best part.
He is the best part.
What are you talking about? I'm super green, man. I'm so green. I ain't got no fire, Colbin.
Yeah.
It's the best performance using a vocoder.
Yes,
in film.
Actually.
It is.
Yeah.
Name another.
Yeah.
Dear listeners, name another.
I would have to go with T-Pain and Freak Nick the Musical.
Oh, God.
Wow. No. Yeah.
Your film knowledge terrifies me. So we don't know any...
I could name a few. Like,
sure, go.
Did you guys see Little Shops of Horrors?
Of course.
Yeah. Rick Moranis. That's a romance first.
And that would also be kind of a horror/musical as well. Yeah.
The whole story is about, you know, this guy has a crush on a girl and he really wants to impress her. So, you know, he feeds people to a plant.
What's going to get me the ladies? Carnivorous plant.
And it worked. She really digged it. Like, she was like, oh my God, I love this plant.
Yeah.
And they got together. Like.
Yeah.
Some girls are weird.
We have trouble naming them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Romances first. Is it because we...
Well, I think it's because a lot of these movies where romance is in the different genre or that has romance with a genre in it, anyways, they're billed as the other genre first. Like, in Guardians of the Galaxy, there is a romance element.
Terrible one.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it's not treated the best way.
Let's use a superhero movie, let's use one that's actually romantic, Spider-Man 2 or something.
Spider-Man 2 or Iron Man or...
Iron Man is not a romance.
Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3,
where it shows their relationship going on a further level, where they're both, you know, really caring about each other.
Right, and she saves him as rescue.
Exactly. So, you know, that's actually a good example. They have this romance element that wasn't really billed at all in trailers and the story or whatever, but it's present, and it's omnipresent because it's really part of the plot of the movie, of these characters. It's important.
Yeah, like Mike said, I think the Spider-Man trilogy, the Sam Raimi one, that's a great series of romance. Yeah. Sure, it's more like, it's hard to say if it's more about superheroism.
A comic book movie about superheroes? Get out of town.
No, but the whole story hinges on Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes Spider-Man. Yeah. He gets a suit because he wants money to impress the girl. He impresses the girl.
Yeah.
And then the second one, like, he saves her. The second one's all about breaking up the girl and losing his powers, losing his love, I guess.
Right. Even the villain has a romance angle where, you know, he becomes a villain because he lost his wife.
Like, the Spider-Man trilogy is a soap opera. Like, that's all it is. Yeah. It's a giant soap opera.
Yeah.
And when emotions get too intense, they have a superhero fight. Like, that's pretty much
And that's the way it works in comics, too.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I guess.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, we did. I mean, the last episode we talked about Lois Lane and Superman.
Yeah.
Great superhero romance, a very well-known one.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the superheroics and the action comes first. Superman started out in Action Comics, not in
Lois Lane.
Love comics. Or, So is it because they're always trying to, like for movies or anything, they're trying to sell to both genders?
I don't think so. I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's a very relatable thing, romance. Mm-hmm. Everybody, yeah.
Why isn't it billed as romance first, since it is the relatable thing?
Because
we all understand romance better than space opera.
I think the answer is quite simple. If you market romance, some guys will go, ew,
Richard Gere. I'm not going to a Richard Gere movie.
Yeah. So I guess.
Well,
it's
I think
same
we've already
comics.
Established, Mike, that you're not going to go see Richard Gere, but you will see Kurt Russell.
Everybody will go see Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
I didn't even invent this.
I mean, no,
it's not my invention.
To be fair, have you seen his mustache in The Hateful Eight? I'm told right there.
Well, I was going to go see that anyway.
Yeah.
I have seen Richard Gere in movies.
Right.
But, you know, it's very rare I would go see a Richard Gere movie.
He is an officer and a gentleman. I mean,
yeah.
I went to see him in the second Marigold Hotel, but because I liked the first one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They sold me on the franchise, and then I went, Richard Gere's in it?
I think romance...
He was good. He was fine.
I think romance is marketed towards ladies, but and some guys would go, but I think
that demographic they're always selling to, the young guys, bros.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that, you know, the male aged 18 to 45 demographic is the one that's mostly...
In which we feature.
Yeah, I know. We are white, straight men aged 18 to 45. We could probably get away with murder, and we run the world. It's unfortunate that we are aware of this godlike power that we have, and it's up to us to really try and use it for good.
Well, we're not Anglophones.
You guys aren't. But
we're part of a linguistic minority, that means there's,
takes us down a notch.
Just a small notch.
Yeah, like, I'm Anglophone, but I can pass as, you know, French speaking.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. If it wasn't for your fashion sense. But,
you just say that because I have an awesome Thor t-shirt on.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
As you are wearing a Fantastic Four t-shirt.
This is my Ben Grimm t-shirt.
Yeah. I'm wearing a Leverage shirt.
I'm wearing an orange
shirt.
If you see my clothes, it's pretty nondescript. I've got an orange shirt. A black
shirt.
So
that was our fashion segment.
That's it. Because,
Episode 3, we already sold out. Back to comics
and romance.
Sure, go.
Yeah. What about, I've never read those, but I heard for a while Wonder Woman, you know, when she first started, she was pretty badass. But then she got, like, pigeonholed into romance comic. She didn't fight for a while. Like, I even remember...
We have to check that out. Like, there's the era where they're always in bondage.
Yeah.
And then there's
That was, for a while, that was her weakness. If she was tied up, she wasn't...
That was her creator's weakness.
Yeah,
everybody's bondage all the time.
He was like a super feminist bondage lover. He was.
Yeah. Wow. I only read a few of the 50s, 60s Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think they were particularly romance based. I mean, there were still action, like, sci-fi.
I have an example.
Stories.
Like, I used to read lots of EC comics because, you know, they made the most pop. They made Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had a few superhero things. One character they had was Moon Girl, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
She was a superhero. She fought crime. She could fly and stuff. Mm-hmm. But after a while, the series just flipped. Suddenly it wasn't Moon Girl. It was a moon, a girl, and a romance. And she didn't use her powers anymore, and she just dated dudes.
Wow.
So it was
a weird girl shift. And a romance?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. It was the same character, but suddenly she didn't fight crime
at all.
Yeah. We should do an episode about it.
We should
do an episode about female superheroes turned into, you know.
And the reverse. Because we really want to do some Patsy Walker.
Yeah, Patsy Walker who became Hellcat.
Yeah, but for a while there was, like, Patsy Walker was a big, I mean, that lasted a long time, and she had two series, Patsy Walker, and then Patsy and Hedy, which was like, she was like Betty and Veronica kind of thing, and then she became Hellcat when, you know, Marvel decided to turn...
Then she became perfect.
then she became perfect.
No, there's a really good Hellcat miniseries that came out in the last few years.
I do not doubt that.
Which has little, you know, Dear Patty letters at the back. There's still, it's Hellcat. Yeah. She's the only Avenger of the Avengers Initiative sent to Alaska. and there's still that romance vibe. It's also very strange with you know, Inuit spirits and stuff. So we might look at that one.
We should
well.
Look at that. We should look at that.
Let's look at that and Moon Girl.
The future is bright, ladies and gentlemen, for romance comics.
Basically, this whole segment was so badly researched that we're just, you know, what will we do in the future? So this is just, we're just brainstorming.
We have an hour to pad out.
Yeah, we're
and gentlemen.
Brainstorming ideas for other shows. And if you have any ideas for us,
I think like, comment, and subscribe.
to bring it back to comics, I think
we never left comics. But carry on.
I think one of the genres that is less likely to have romance is like space operas and you know sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
For some odd reason.
Yeah. As if we didn't. One series I'd like us all to read because I've read everything but the last issue to this point is Alex and Alex plus Ada.
Okay.
Which is basically the comic book version of Her, the Spike Jonze movie.
Yeah.
So it's a guy who lonely,
falls in love with Siri.
It's a lonely guy. He's given an android who looks like a beautiful young woman by his grandmother, and his grandmother is screwing her android. And she hopes that, you know, you'll find companionship.
She should.
But then there's this whole thing where you could possibly unlock your android's sentience.
Okay.
So if the android is sentient, but that's illegal, and there's a traffic of it, and then the couple becomes, you know, wanted by the law. I don't know how it ends. But there's like 18 issues or something.
That's interesting.
And that's a sci-fi romance. I mean, it's point blank a romance.
It's not very romantic, but it's the love story.
Actually, it's super sweet because she's discovering who she is and her sentience, and he feels really awkward about it because he unlocked the android and he doesn't want her to feel beholden to him.
Forced. Or, yeah, that's interesting.
Like she's his property. Yeah. But not really.
In that case, going back to, you know, romance and sci-fi, there is a Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams in it, which is essentially a love story about an AI who becomes self-aware.
Yeah, but it's not a very good movie.
It is not. I will completely agree with you. But it does hold that premise itself.
Yeah. But loving the robot or loving the alien is actually a trope.
Right, but
that
this,
we do
is,
find
this is
in,
the
in,
robot yeah. actually learning to love. It's about the robot, the android.
Number 5 is alive.
Johnny Five is alive.
Johnny Five.
Yeah.
Ex Machina, too.
Ex Machina had that element.
Yeah. Yeah, but was it really? The guy fell in love.
Don't spoil it. That one's too new.
Oh, yeah, really?
Don't spoil it.
Really? Don't spoil it.
Ex Machina, it's not even on DVD yet. Yeah. So,
Let's only spoil stuff that's been out for 20 years.
It's the same thing.
Something I wrote in my notes, actually, that I've been reading recently, is Sex Criminals.
Sure.
Yeah. Didn't Mike read that?
I've read a few issues, but I'd love to read it.
For you guys who don't know, Sex Criminals is a comic where people in this world, when they have sex, time stops. So these two people who have this power find each other.
Right. And during their orgasm, there's like a time bubble.
Yeah, a time bubble.
During their always?
During
every orgasm.
No,
yeah.
Well, it's that metaphor. Oh, yeah. And then they go out and steal stuff.
Mm-hmm. Basically, time comes back when, I think the guy said, once I can get horny again, time comes back. Like, once I can get a boner again or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The woman's different a bit, but it's the same principle. But anyways, it's really interesting because it's, at first, just a relationship. Two people find each other who never knew anyone else had this.
Yeah.
And then turns into this really adventure. But
it's sort of like a Bonnie and Clyde
with
nudity.
Yeah.
Oh, there's really nothing nudity, like comic nudity.
Nudity, musical numbers. It's great.
Yeah.
Musical numbers in comics.
Yeah, that's. But it's true. That happens.
Yeah. But it's great because it's not very, like, it's not romantic, but it's a nice, they're a nice couple. They're they're only learning to know each other and story goes on.
Well, it's a sort of relationship where you where there's sex first.
Yeah.
And something develops from that.
It has to start somewhere.
And sometimes it starts there, I suppose.
It's a good way to start. I don't know.
I've never. I don't think I've ever started.
Tips to date, boss.
Hey, be alive. That's a tip.
Oh. Are you alive? Are you over 18? Okay.
Oh, I'm not even that fussy.
Well, we'll see how.
I think the government is. You know, someone somewhere is that fussy.
Thank you for not using my real name.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the alive part, and then I just got creepy.
Yeah.
You got greedy.
Anyway, back to comics.
Well, let's see exactly how that actually plays out. When it's a romance first, so we'll be talking about a cowgirl, cowgirl story.
It's about cowgirls.
Yes.
It's a good one.
It's called Calamity Jane by Royal Roberts, and to give you a little bit of background on it.
If you read it backwards, is it a reverse cowgirl story?
I don't. Come on.
You were saving that one.
I was.
Like, you're like,
he's at home writing this stuff down. It's Cowgirl Romances number one. It came out in 1950 from Fiction House Magazines. And it was recently remastered. And it's available on Comixology from Yojimbo Press. They just remastered the first and the 12th, which is the last issue, not the issues in between. I don't know if there's any plans for more, but Calamity Jane, this strip, a six-pager, is actually was supposed to be a running feature in Cowgirl Romances. There were three stories, and then I think the third story, from what I read online, the third story says Calamity Jane every month in Cowgirl, and but she never appeared again.
No, that's sad.
It was a little serial. So what we have is like the first chapter, the origin story, and we'll be listening to it thanks to Romance Comics Theater.
Ooh, the cowboy's colder, Tony Tyler. But fightin' anger Calamity Jane by Royal Roberts. Ooh, he's a Wescoey Webbit. Tony was a darling of the tumbling outfit. Every buckaroo on the ranch called her sweetheart and loved her, like they would their own daughter. So when she begged for a chance to ride Satan, they refused. But not for long. Tony always got her own way.
Yippee! I've licked you, Satan. You're mean, but I've tamed you. Yippee!
That's enough, Tony. You've won. Now get off of him.
I'm coming. I told you bunch of saddle tramps I wouldn't get hurt, and I didn't.
Good going, Tony. You're the best bronco buster on the whole tumbling Y range.
Hurrah for ponytails. She said she'd do it, and by cracking, she did.
Thanks, boys. Now maybe you'll stop treating me like a kid. I knew Satan wasn't the killer you thought he was.
Oh, oh, oh. Here comes Tex with fire in his eyes.
Tex! Did you see me? I rode Satan. Ask the gang. I did. Honest, I did.
And I'm supposed to give you a big hug and kiss, eh?
What's the matter, Tex? She didn't hurt no one.
Yeah, Tony's got nerve. There ain't none to get sore about.
Which one of you flea-bitten fools saddled that horse for her? Oh, it was you and your partner, eh, Pecos? Well, you're not riding this range anymore.
Ah, we didn't mean nothing. Oh!
Now pick yourself up, draw your pay, and get out. You know that horse might have killed her. And as for you, young lady, if I ever catch you fooling around on old Satan again, I'll skin you alive. Now get on back to the ranch house, scat.
You leave me alone, Tex. I'm 16, and you can't treat me like a child. Ouch!
Humiliated, spanked like some naughty school child, and by Tex Barlow, right in front of everyone. Tex, the very man she had to impress when she rode old Satan. It was just too much.
There now, Tony, dry those tears. You'll feel better after you've had your dinner. He only did it because he loves you.
Take it away. I don't want to eat again. I hate Tex Barlow. I hate... What did you say? He only did it because he loves me? He was afraid old Satan might have hurt his princess? Tex loves me. Where is Tex, Martha? I've got to find him. I've got to tell him I didn't mean all those ornery names I called him. I'll put on my best dress, fix my hair, and find him.
That's better, Tony. I've got an idea. He's in the office.
Meanwhile, strange shadows flitted the moonlight outside a nearby ranch house.
Why the change of heart, Pecos? I thought you ain't sure decided to join up with us.
Now, Tex Barlow gave us the gate because we sat old Satan for that kid Tony. So we thought we'd throw in with you after all. We know the setup.
And how? Tomorrow's payday, Tex. We'll be out of the office figuring out payroll with Marsha right now. It'll be a cinch.
Now let's get going, boys. We'll split up the dough and hide out across the border. Come on.
Meanwhile, at the Tumbling Y office.
You paid Pecos and Shorty off after I discharged them, eh, Marcy? They should have known better than to let Tony ride Satan.
That horse might have crippled her for life. Well, now we'll fix up the payroll.
Later, Marcy. Suppose we talk of other things first. Why don't you like me the way your kid cousin does?
Poor Tony. She sure got a crush on you. I guess that goes for me too, Tex. I guess I've always loved you.
Ayas! Dot, dot, dot.
I'll tell Tex how sorry I was and that his little princess will always be very, very careful not to hurt herself. What?
I'll buy you a ring tomorrow, Marcy, dear. We'll be married next month.
Tex? Marsha? Oh, how could they? They've broken my heart, and I never, never want to see them again. I'll run away. That's just what I'll do. I'll leave a note wishing them all the happiness in the world. Then I'll fade out of their lives forever. Who's that? Pecos and Shorty? Tex swore he'd kill them if they ever dared set foot on this ranch again. They're sure acting suspicious.
I'll play lookout. You guys go on in and pull the job.
Good. I won't see that tin horn foreman's face when she's looking down my gun barrel.
Pecos and Shorty gone. They'll shoot Tex. What can I do? I've got it. No one cares what happens to poor little me. I'll take a chance.
Not a soul in sight. This job's gonna be a cinch.
What? Like lightning, the renegade's hand turned toward his gun butt. But before he could draw, the slipper's heel had crashed his temple and inside the office.
You fools think you can get away with this?
We don't need your advice, Tex. Clean out the safe shortly.
Yeah. I've got a score to settle with this hombre.
You mean for the lacing gave us out in the corral? Lay it on heavy, Pecos. Give him one for me.
That's a mighty big talk, and I guess you wouldn't be making it if you didn't have me covered.
Oh! Seconds later, outside!
Here they come with the payroll, if only my trick works.
Come on, boys. We're rich. And I guess Tex won't be fast throwing punches after gun whipping I gave him. What?
We're caught in a rope noose. It's that dang blasted kid.
Stop, or we'll shoot, you snub nose little fool. Oh!
Ew! Ow!
God dang!
What's going on?
There's a snake in my boot.
Oh no!
I'm not stopping and you're not shooting. Get going, horse. We got him hog tied.
And later.
I'll take over from here, Tony, and I just wish Pecos and his hombres would make a break.
Please don't let them, Tex. I guess I'm not very good at manhunting.
I thought I had you roped for keeps, but Marsha is the one who's going to put her brand on you.
You forget me in a couple of days, Tony. Wait and see.
Soon.
Oh, Martha. He said I'd forget him. He doesn't know how deep my love was. No, he'll never know.
The sheriff's outside, Tony. He came for the prisoners and wants a statement from you.
The sheriff? He's taller and much more handsome than Tex. Tell him to wait a minute, Martha. I want to primp up a little before he sees me.
Romance Comics Theater credits. I had the pleasure this episode of reconnecting with my half-sister from Texas, Chantal. She played Calamity Jane / Tony. Her husband, Joel, played Tex. Marsha was played by Nat. All those extra cowboys by Bass and Marty. The narrator, or perhaps Yosemite Sam, was played by Fern. And I had the misfortune of playing Martha. We apologize for the accents. At least two of them are genuine.
Once I had a secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatience to be free.
I guess the first thing we should note is that Calamity Jane is not in the story per se.
No, it's just like an idol.
It's
confused me. I was like, am I reading the right thing?
The real Calamity Jane, yeah. It was Martha Jane Canary, mm-hmm. Not Tony Tyler, as in the story.
Yeah.
So this is just like they stole the name. And I thought at first...
Is that why the series, like, fell out? People are confused?
Every month, Calamity Jane, and it never happens again.
Never happened.
And Calamity Jane, I mean, is supposed to be, like, this tomboy, even mannish... real person that existed who almost passed herself off as a man often. Mm-hmm. And this petite, pretty Tony Tyler isn't anywhere near the real Calamity Jane to just poach the name. No. And I thought at first, is it the Calamity Jane? You know, did they take her from the Calamity Jane musical? Okay. Like the Doris Day movie. Mm-hmm. But the Doris Day movie came out 3 years later.
Huh.
But she looks like the Doris Day character. She really looks like Doris Day.
So, Calamity Jane. Is the Doris Day a comic book movie?
Maybe. No, but it's a musical.
Then again, if it's a musical, it might have been on Broadway previously before becoming a movie. So it could still be...
But then she'd still be Jane.
Right.
Yeah. She'd still be Calamity Jane. I mean, so in this, it's just, it's a heroic cowgirl, and they just took the name to sell it.
Are the other more than likely, issues different girls? Hmm? Is that what it is? No,
it's always Tony.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we'll find out where she takes the moniker of Calamity Jane.
Well, she's kind of like Calamity Jane. She's a tomboy. She likes to ride. She's great at it.
Maybe Calamity Jane's just her cowgirl name. Like, she becomes it.
Yeah. And I mean, the real Calamity Jane isn't exactly a romance figure.
Yeah. Right.
Like, so they needed a 16-year... This is a 16-year-old girl.
Yep.
They called her sweetheart and loved her like they would their own daughter.
Yeah. Well, that got weird.
It's very strange.
How was the writer being uncomfortable? She's like, she's 16.
So what did you think of the story?
Well,
as a Western, as a romance?
Yeah. As a Western, it was fun. All those little Western things.
Yeah. You know. It felt... it was Western. It had all the Western tropes. Yeah. It follows the kind of Western script of, you know, other stuff we've seen before. I'm not sure if the romance element was well adapted to it, or vice versa, if the cowboy angle was well adapted to the romance. And this is, you know, personally my own opinion about this. It felt a bit shoehorned in, you know. We're going to mention Tony or Calamity Jane or whatever she goes by now. She was quick to do 180 degrees on her opinion about everything when it came to romance.
I think it's funny because I think this is perspective kind of deal, because if it's Tony, the perspective is like, okay, this is a romance. But if you focus just on Tex, he's a typical cow guy.
That makes sense.
He's a typical cowboy. He gets there. He's like in the love triangle between two girls.
Yeah.
He kind of gets to choose.
She only has a crush. She only has a crush on him, right?
Yeah. It's unrequited love. That's what it is. But
it is because he's with he's with Marcia.
Was it Marcia or Marianne?
No, there's a Martha and a Marcia, which is very confusing.
Yeah.
Especially since the real Calamity Jane is called Martha. So is Calamity Jane because the woman who brings in the soup?
I guess.
What Marty's saying is, if this comic were branded as Tex Barslow, complete Western, the romance angle isn't even, you know, brought to light. It's just like, it's the B-plot to Tex Barlow's adventures. But this is billed as Calamity Jane.
Right. And it starts with her.
Exactly.
She's on
Satan the horse. Yeah.
She's riding Satan, which is a metaphor for sure.
Right. Taming Satan.
Yeah. That's the best line. Line is... I've licked you, Satan. Like, it's like, holy crap.
She also begged to ride Satan.
Yeah,
she dropped the gloves. Oh, yeah.
You're mean, but I tamed you. Yippee.
It might be Satan. It might be Satan or something.
Yeah. Or Shatan.
Also, I really want to point out that Tex in that first page just looks like an old Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yes, I actually have this in my notes. Everybody's ascot game is on point in this comic.
Everyone's Fred from Scooby-Doo.
No, but everything they seem to say has like a sexual connotation. You know,
every frame is sexual in this thing.
Yeah, because she's...
If I ever catch you fiddling around old Satan again, I'll skin you alive.
Even calling them a bunch of saddle tramps.
And then he whips her with his gun belt.
There is a little bit of spanking.
He whips her with his gun belt. I'm not sure if the gun is still drawn into the belt, but you know, that's like taking it to a whole other
this,
level.
My friends, is a common trope in 50s romance comics.
Yeah, whipping girls, like, I don't get
there's a lot of spanking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a thing in the 50s?
I think it was.
It was.
I'm trying to think of an episode of Mad Men where...
There's a famous ad for 1950s coffee brand where it says... It has the man of the house with his pipe and his whole Bing Crosby attire.
Sure.
With his wife on his knee and he's spanking her. And it basically says, if she didn't taste test the coffee in the store before bringing it home... She deserves a spanking. Demand the best of your wife.
Probably something Bing Crosby did.
Right.
Oh, my God.
My name is Bing.
Jesus.
Well, you know what
I'm saying? So I guess, yes, it is a 50s thing.
You know
thing.
What I'm saying? Rule of thumb? That originally means the rule of thumb is your whipping stick for your wife needed to be as thick as your thumb.
No thicker than your thumb.
Yeah, wow. somebody got beat up in Boondock Saints for saying that.
Yeah.
So, yes, it is a common trope.
Yeah.
Whipping
a terrible one.
Yeah,
she's 16.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a little bit too old, a little bit too young to whip. I don't get it. Like,
well, why would you be
like
whipped?
If she was 24 and he whipped her, yeah, whatever. She had it coming.
No.
But it's a very small joking. Little whip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not a whip. I mean,
it's his belt.
Well, he's an
asshole. She's not over
belt.
His knee here.
Well,
she's,
no, but Tex is an asshole. She proves herself how badass she licked Satan. And he's like, what the hell? Yeah. He's like, why are you so awesome? Get back in the house.
And to be fair, not only does he whip her, he belts the two guys who actually let her ride the horse, then fires them.
And those two guys were super happy for her. They're like, oh, man, this girl's awesome.
Oh,
like,
yeah. They
we
were.
Couldn't do it. We're She's all awesome.
Yeah. And he gets them both with one punch. One punch knocks out the two guys.
They all have that rapist look in their eye, though. That every guy in this is an asshole.
Right. Oh, definitely. I mean, I completely agree with you.
I mean,
they're all terrible men.
They're all horrible.
Yeah,
right.
But Tex is conceivably the villain
right now. Yeah. Yes, right now.
Because when Pecos and Shorty leave and decide to come back and steal some horses or whatever.
Yeah, because at this point
it's just revenge.
Pecos and Shorty were the only two that weren't in on the plot of the guys that are still employed by Tex, which means what kind of horrible boss is he? When the two guys who said, no, you know what, I don't want to rob my boss, gets fired, and then, you know what, fuck this, I want to get revenge on this guy, because they got fired. Everybody else is still gainfully employed by this dude, and you know what, fuck him, we're just going to rob him. Like, you know, seriously, it took these two guys to get fired to go, you know what, fuck Tex Barslow, we're going to steal his money.
Because Tex is an asshole.
He's an asshole.
He deserves everything he gets.
Yeah, and yet he still wins. That's it. I'm becoming a douchebag. That's it. Apparently, it's the only way to get ahead in life.
Well, it kind of explains why so many douchebags are out there now.
They grew up on these comics.
Yeah, grew up on these comics. Yeah, I'm going to be Tex.
Yeah, I want to be Tex. Tex awesome.
Tex gets everything.
So Tex has his own little relationship going, right? He's even going to ask. He asks Marcia in marriage.
Yeah, he has it going. He pretty much asks her out there, and she seems willing. It's like, all right, let's get married in a month. I mean, Tex moves fast.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some skill right there.
And at the same time, Calamity Jane is all dressed up.
Yeah.
Red dress.
In the red dress.
In the red dress.
Oh, yeah.
Red
There's always a red dress.
Yeah, that seems to be a trope now, right? Red dress.
She's 16 going on 18. Right
you know
now.
What? It's a red dress. Her name is Toni.
Yeah.
Maybe we can link it to Toni Benson, as Toni Tyler is like her great-great-grandmother?
I think so.
I think
and
is.
That dress...
Remember the curse of the red dress?
The curse of the red dress. You know, her grandma refused to wear the red dress.
It's the same dress.
It is the same dress.
I think it is.
Is that her grandma?
The cut
is... No.
The cut on the dress can possibly be the same dress.
It could.
I think it would be more her great-grandma.
No, it could be a grandma. The Wild West wasn't that long ago.
Well, it was still...
it really wasn't that long ago.
It could be the 1850s.
Yeah.
You know, it could be 1810 or 1850 or whatever. If it is, you know... Well, to be fair, grandma did look a bit melty in that first story.
Well, no, that's a thing you're missing. Grandma's not now. Grandma was... What the count was in the 50s?
Right, it was 1945.
Yeah. Or something, yeah.
Yeah, 1945, yeah.
Yeah.
Came out in 47.
So yeah,
story itself,
her grandma 60 years before. Was
maybe she rejected the power of the red dress,
or maybe it was the grandma on the daddy's side.
Oh,
granddad's side,
grandpa.
Yeah,
but the red dress here gives her powers too. Like,
yeah,
she climbed that tree in 2.5 seconds
with heels. Mad respect to anyone who can climb anything with heels.
I'm saying
there were no.
The only reason she takes off the heels. is to knock somebody out the, about the head with it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And there are no branches to climb that tree. That tree is just barren. Like,
no, no. She ninja'd. She just jumped in. She is awesome.
Yeah. And then she drives, you know, she rides with the bad guys tied behind her. She saves the day. I mean, what does Tex do?
He fights a whole bunch of people, too.
Tex is a poser.
Well, no, he does. Well, does he? Does he? Because they go, give us your money, and then they hit him with the butt of a gun, and he's out. And then she comes in, and she ropes all the guys rides them behind her.
That's what I don't understand. She tamed the hardest horse named Satan.
Yeah.
She beat up three guys alone, and they're still like, ugh, girls.
Because every man in
you would have been in danger. Like, no, she could kick your ass.
It could be maybe Tex is afraid of being emasculated by her.
I think Tex is emasculated by her.
It could very well be.
And because he forgets he has a penis and he's still a guy, he tends to, you know, push her down. And because he's an asshole.
Because look at how this ends. You've got Tony, or Jane, or whatever we call her. Yeah. We've got Jane embraces Marcia, whom she just saved.
Yeah.
It's sisterhood. She's in a relationship with Tex, and
they're still friends.
They're still friends, and maybe Jane realizes, you know, I've got a month to tell her this guy's a douche.
Yeah.
Don't.
Or maybe she's really happy because she doesn't seem to be very clever.
Marcia? Immediately Jane goes, "Oh, the sheriff's outside. He's like, you know, he's dreamy."
Yeah.
So her attention's switched from, so she is a 16-year-old girl.
She's a 16-year-old girl.
She's flighty.
Yeah.
But she's also the heroine of this.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if cowboy romance, cowgirl romances was like other romance comics of the era, basically designed for girls and young women to read, which was probably the market.
Right. Yeah. And it's also, let's be honest, this is a product of its time as well.
Sure.
Their idea of selling a romance to a girl is, here, do this, you know, it was very...
Well, you say that, but at the same time, she's action-oriented.
She is action-oriented, but the romance element is, you know, oh, she's 16, she's flighty, she's almost a very shallow, Tex, he's so, but, wait, the sheriff is also dreamy, he's a hunk, maybe I can
land
him.
And we'll probably meet him in issue number 2.
More than likely.
I still find interesting how she's not one-dimensional. She's like this badass girl, but at the same time, she's still like, oh, boy.
Well,
I want to be pretty in my dress, which is kind of cool.
She's
both.
You know, they do a good job of making her very beautiful in that dress.
You see that trope often where women who are badass are like, I hate men. Men are bad. I'm badass.
But this is a lot closer to the women we
know.
Yeah.
That's a lot closer to the women we hang out with.
I mean, I don't know. None of the women I know can ride a horse.
No, well, no, Adrienne.
Oh, but, can she?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She just needs a stepladder to get onto the horse.
Well, she's small and she can probably climb the hell out of a tree.
Well, she's a climber. But, she's actually a cliff climber. So,
so she's basically.
Yeah, that girl's amazing.
She's Tony.
She's Jane.
So, anyways, it's closer to the feminist ideal of today, I find.
Yeah.
Or at least my perception of it, where
actually, you know
we
what?
Can be girly, we can be pretty, we can like those girly things, and yet we're
taming horses, climbing trees,
we're autonomous,
roping men.
We're doing things we want to do.
Yeah. As long as someone can
whip
you.
You know, there are no gender limits, but at the same time, they also embrace the things that are
ladies and gentlemen.
Common to their
even
gender.
The very sexist
anyone
moment
can lick
of
Satan.
Being like, even the sexist moment of being whipped, she's like humiliated by it.
Right.
She hates it.
It's wrong.
She's like, what the hell?
I don't think
is this?
I don't think Royal Roberts or whoever he really is, because that's a an eau de plume. I don't think the writer or artist means this to be.
No.
Yeah, that's whipper. It's wrong in the story.
If it's a eau de plume, could it be a lady who wrote this?
That would be very interesting to find out.
I would have to do more research, but my initial research showed that we don't even know who wrote this.
Okay. Yeah.
It's signed Royal Roberts. The writer is effectively unknown, at least according to the Grand Comics database.
Because the men are really men from the, I mean, probably from that time.
Well,
they were all
at the time,
macho.
You know, Westerns
were
the big thing.
They're very John Wayne.
There was a lot of Westerns everywhere.
Yeah. But I don't know if she was written as a typical woman in comics or in any media. She's probably a lot different. I mean,
probably why she's Calamity Jane, at least in spirit.
Okay.
Because yeah. that's the Western heroine that yeah. that was famous, that everyone knew.
They're kind yeah. of riding on the famous name for
right, right.
sales.
Or... So she's, they are, but at the same time, the character is that kind of yeah. Self-possessed
right.
Cowgirl heroine.
So it becomes more of a title than an yeah. actual name.
Yeah, like she's good at riding horses. She's right. good at, you know, fighting banditos right. or whatever. Yeah. So she's Calamity Jane, in, at least in spirit. She's flighty, and because she's 16, right. probably the yeah. age the reader would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably. So I think that this is sort of a feminist yeah. tale, even though it has to be dressed up in... If you look at it as a Western, it's a feminist story.
Yeah.
If you look at it as a romance... Well,
it's an action story as well.
It's kind of a typical romance where the girl kind of swoons mm-hmm. when she sees a handsome chap.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a romance comic. But, it's that kind of thing
fine.
Has to happen.
Yeah. Which is yeah. still fine, because we see a lot of characters in shows and stuff have that one guy who sees girls or and is like, oh my God. Like, mm-hmm. who's an example? Anyone to watch Pokemon? Brock and Pokemon?
Oh, yeah, Brock and Officer Jenny and Nurse Joy.
Yeah, every time he sees those yeah. girls, he swoons. And yeah. everyone's like, haha, silly Brock.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of cool seeing a girl like doing
yeah.
that.
Sure. And because Tex is such an asshole,
yeah.
we don't
yeah,
mind.
We don't care.
We don't care that her attentions go elsewhere.
Yeah. yeah.
But, I mean, I think a lot of girls are attracted to assholes because of all the peacocking and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're confident and they're yeah. strong and they, I don't know, what. They do, but
I mean, that, you know, yeah, yeah.
But you know, so
we don't peacock.
No, we don't.
No. We don't peacock.
We lost the peacock.
The feathers are.
But
if I had bright feathers, trust me, I'd be showing everyone.
But being,
right now.
being flighty is not. It's not bad. It's,
no.
I think it's actually very normal.
Especially yeah. for someone that age.
Especially I mean, yeah. for somebody that
and
age.
And yeah. let's not forget this was built as a serial. So if every yeah. issue, and it would have gone on 12 issues if it had gone on all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If every issue, Jane kind of has to have a romantic arc.
Right.
You can't pair her off because as soon as she... let's just use Marcia in here and yeah, she married Tex. Well, the romance aspect is over. The right. soap opera is over.
Exactly.
So she needs to find a new cute boy every issue, probably.
Yeah, it kind of has to become like a creature of the week, but in this case,
creature
more of a...
Creature of the
week. Well, you know, in TV tropes, yeah. X-Files had a creature right. of the week
yeah,
at one
creature
point.
Of the
yeah. Supernatural had that as yeah. well. Power Rangers had a creature of the week for every episode. But in this case, it would be more kind of like a hunk of the month. You know, like a
right.
calendar. There's 12 yeah. dudes.
Hunk of the
you know,
month.
You know, they might be firefighters. They might be, you know, whatever.
Well, thank God she goes for, you know, like a rancher
yeah,
to like a sheriff.
Yeah.
She goes up a...
Yeah. yeah. Where do you go next?
Yeah, well, you
I,
know,
I don't know.
Issue 6, she kind of has a slump. She goes for the guy who plays the piano in the saloon. You know, she's... maybe
an artist.
Settled. Yeah, an artist, yeah.
He's also the first one to get shot.
And you could do
then maybe a professor or something like that.
Maybe a soldier in a civil war.
Oh, there you go.
Because the real Calamity Jane had a civil
yeah,
war
yeah.
career.
Why aren't we writing these things? That's what
yeah, we should write a comic.
And the comic, Calamity Jane, I mean, that's public domain.
Unless you have artistic
yeah.
talent,
we
you can draw it.
I'll try. Well, you can't do very worse than Royal Roberts here, whoever he really was, because his figures are, you know, very often someone is huge and the other person is tiny.
Yeah. Yeah.
The proportions are off and all over the place. Like when Tex gets hit by a gun, by the butt of a gun, that mm-hmm. gun is as big
huge.
As his chest.
Yeah,
yeah
he's big,
it is a
big,
huge cartoony gun like in Roger Rabbit.
I especially love the moment where she finds out Tex and Marcia are like a thing. She,
yeah.
her arms and hands are doing, I'm not sure what they're doing.
there's one of her hands
not
where...
putting her hand on her chest like, oh no.
I call
she's,
that
like,
the gosh gesture.
Gosh!
The gosh!
Yeah. Well, it's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. So
there's
I'll
one picture
this.
She's
where,
dancing the funky chicken
yeah.
or something.
There's one picture where one of her fingers is bent where at that angle, it can only be broken. And, like,
well,
completely snapped off and only hanging by the skin.
Well, she didn't fall off the horse, but
because I'm
did
trying
throw
right now,
ground.
And it hurts to even put my finger in that disposition. It's like at the first phalange. It's like,
where is this?
Near the end, like where Marty was saying, where she finds out Marcia and Tex. There's this one position where she's kind of like standing, and her hand looks completely screwed up.
And there's that very, at the very beginning when she jumps off the horse, looks like she's going to choke Tex or hug Tex, but she's like an elf. She's like a tiny elf.
She's really tiny.
Page 2, panel 3.
Very, very small lady.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Well, she's 16. Yeah. She's small.
She's spry.
She's small. She's flighty. She's athletic. She's perfect.
Then later, she's tall. She's as tall as the door frame. Anyway,
maybe it's her Calamity Jane powers activating. Like she becomes the Legend. So right. She grows like the Incredible Hulk.
She's tall in the red dress, which we know is magical. Yeah.
The red dress.
Well, does Mr. Roberts draw this too, or back then they didn't have the artist?
No, the artist would be the only one named.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Royal Roberts would be the artist, or the credited artist. Mm-hmm. But it could be, very often in comics those days, you might have Royal Roberts, let's say Royal Roberts is a real person.
Yeah.
Maybe he is. Anyone in his studio might have actually drawn it, but then he'd have signed it.
Okay.
Wow. Kind of,
that would happen. Or different artists from a company all use the same pen name.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So it's very hard, especially for a comic like this, whom no one cares about.
So basically, the comic lives by itself.
Yeah, there's just research on Golden Age comics, you know, in the superhero genre, the stuff that people still care about today.
Right.
But when you're looking at romance or companies that don't exist anymore, like this one, the research, the studios, nobody knows anything about anything. So it's very hard to find. Especially since they did do those kinds of things.
Okay. Yeah.
So Royal Roberts could be the writer, could be writer-artist.
There's probably records in like public libraries of or government offices of where those places were, patents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is something that someone local would have to sift through how many piles of data just to find something.
Possibly.
Go and do our dirty work.
The Quality Companion is a book that Tomorrow's came out with, and they do a lot of they have the Alter Ego magazine. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so they did a lot of interviews and research, and it's very, very well researched. It's only about Quality Comics, which is one of the major companies from the Golden Age.
Right.
And even they can't always find who did what.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably a lost cause.
We're going to have to invent time travel.
If I find anything before the podcast airs, then I'll just insert it here.
Oh, wow, Mike. Wow.
That is absolutely interesting.
And it's very possible there was just dead air right there.
It's poignant, brilliant, compelling, and rich.
Incredible that I found all that.
Yes.
Yep. To wrap up on Calamity Jane, would you have read another story?
I would like to read all the stories with this lady. She was awesome. I liked her. I thought that Tex was an asshole. Yeah. Everybody in there was an asshole except her.
I wonder if Tex and all that, you know, are continuing characters.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'd like to read more of her.
You know, I wasn't completely sold on it, but after this discussion, you know what? Yeah, I do want to read more about it. And if Tex and Marcia aren't, you know, recurring characters, okay. But I do want to find out more about her.
Yeah. And the whole, the cowgirl romances, the whole issue is very much like this.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of the girls, the heroines, look a lot like Tony. They just have a different name.
Yeah.
The blonde, the reddish blondes look exactly like this. And then there's black-haired ones who look exactly like this, except with black hair. Yeah. But they've also got the same kind of lots of action plus, a romantic entanglement.
I'd love to see more because anyone that can take down three guys with one shoe needs more
and a
exposure.
Horse named Satan.
Like, her horse is named Satan and she beats guys with shoes. I want to read more.
Yeah,
I want to see the movie.
Yeah. Like, imagine what she can do with an actual weapon.
Put that in Jonah Hex 2, you know.
Oh, yes. Because everyone saw Jonah Hex the
movie. I saw it. I saw it with our friend Maxam, and he was super stoked to go see it. And, well, you know.
I don't even think Megan Fox would see Jonah Hex, and she was in it.
Yeah. Well, John Malkovich was in it as well, and, you know, he'll go see anything and probably be in anything as
If I were Megan Fox, I don't think I'd watch any movies I was in.
No.
Well, if I were Megan Fox, maybe I would, but I'm me, and I wouldn't watch a movie with Megan Fox.
Well, if Megan Fox was you,
that's it.
I would go see every movie she's in.
She would be...
If Megan Fox was Mike, I would go see every movie he's in or she's in, because especially Jennifer's Body, just to see Mike in her role, or the first Transformers movie with Mike writhing over the engine block, I'd be like, you know what?
No, I don't want to talk about... No.
All right.
Michael Bay fetishizing Mike. Yes, I want to see this.
I'd explode in the first reel.
Advertisement for another awesome comic book podcast.
Do you want to hear the origin of Superman or Batman? Of course not. You're listening to a Geek Culture podcast. You know the origins of Superman and Batman. You've always known them. Your unborn grandchildren know the origins of Superman and Batman. But what about Guy Gardner, Blue Beetle, or the Phantom Stranger? What about Firestorm, Sandman, or the Golden Age Fury? Those are just a few of the stories covered in the Secret Origins podcast, a review show dedicated to the Secret Origins comic published by DC in the 1980s. Each episode of the Secret Origins podcast features me, Ryan Daly, and an all-star collection of guest hosts revealing or revisiting the legends of the DC superheroes and villains. And if you're already sick of hearing my voice on this promo, the good news is at least 50% of the talking on the Secret Origins podcast is done by a terrific guest from the podcast and blogging community. So check out the Secret Origins podcast, available on iTunes and at secretoriginspodcast.wordpress.com.
So we're opening the listener feedback, and this time I'm opening I'm opening the bag.
We have listeners?
We have a bag.
Wow. We have a bag. And the bag,
I was
the
never
electronic,
told about the bag.
Yes, there's an electronic bag. Oh. So you can, obviously people can leave comments
on. Can I
give
my post address so they can send us stuff?
By mail?
Regular
by mail?
Like
I got feedback for episode 1, and we're in like episode 45.
We'll do a P.O. box, so they'll bomb the post
okay,
office.
Okay, well, let's find a P.O. box first. But right now it's Twitter, it's Facebook, it's possibly iTunes, but nobody's left an iTunes comment yet.
Okay.
They're kind of rare. Or the blog, obviously, okay. Where we leave our things. And also privately.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, we have friends. A lot of people who listen to the podcast are actual, you know, people we know in life.
Yeah. Right.
And Amélie Montour, which she played the lead in the last episodes. She played the lead secretary
right,
who had
right.
a too short a miniskirt.
She's a nice lady. Mm.
Yeah. Yes, and she, I'll have to translate this in my head because she wrote it in French, but she says her dad was always talking about the miniskirt at home. It was something was really, really striking when it happened when he was younger. It really marked him. At the time, he was in the Air Force, so he was around men all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was especially striking to him. And this is how she says it. Men who see men all day do like the tasteful underbutt. Her words.
Yeah.
Her words. The one word I didn't have to translate was underbutt. Tasteful underbutt.
Yeah, I don't think there's a French equivalent.
Souffesse.
Yes, you know, it still doesn't sound sexy.
No, I don't know. It sounds tasty.
Sounds sexy. Does underbutt sound sexy?
You know what? Under,
really?
Under
really
anything.
Tasteful underbutt.
Under anything.
Tasteful
underbutt. Under boob, side boob. You know, okay. All
so
right.
We also had a Facebook comment from Max Romero. He said, "Seriously, you guys, I'm having a comic book romance with this podcast."
Oh,
people are generally
adorable.
Positive.
Thank you, Mr.
Generally
Romero.
Positive.
I don't know this man. I'm worried.
That's okay.
Maybe he's related to George Romero.
Oh.
On Twitter, somebody was already having a lot of somebodies were already having an intense discussion about Superman and Lois Lane and why Lois Lane isn't.
I saw that the other day.
Yeah.
Right. So, two women in particular, mm-hmm. Zoraida Merlo, I'm not sure how to say it, she's from Brazil, and Veronica Cristina. These two engaged me in conversation on Twitter. I noticed it because they retweeted the podcast saying, "Finally, men are talking about the crappy relationship that is Superman and Wonder Woman."
Oh, good.
Oh. Was that sarcastic?
No. Fine. Well, and then I said something like, "Really? Finally?" Because I thought we were saying this all along. Yeah, this was stupid all along. But maybe in their circle, it seemed that only women were taking issue with
it. If they keep doing comics, it means it must work for a lot of people, I guess.
We're guessing teenage boys?
Yeah.
No, well, actually, nobody can agree. And I actually asked this on open channels. Are there Superman Wonder Woman supporters? Please.
Please.
You know, talk to us.
And nobody answered?
Nobody's answered yet.
Well, apparently writers like it. I mean,
I'm all for having a civil discussion with them. If they, you know, if you support the Superman Wonder Woman, you know, give us. We're against it. We have not been shy about it.
No.
But I am more than willing to have an earnest discussion with someone who would support it.
You know,
I want to hear their side.
Maybe we just haven't seen the good arguments.
Yeah.
Maybe there are good arguments. I can
or a good writer.
I don't think there have been any good arguments in the comics themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. They've yet to prove it. Anyway, these two people not only talked to me on Twitter there, but also left comments on our blog.
Oh.
But if I pick and choose some of the comments here, one of the things they did take issue at our lack, we didn't go far enough for them.
I thought we didn't talk about
Wonder Woman enough.
Wonder Woman, or even Lois enough.
Yeah. They said they liked that we took the initiative, but that we could have done more, and we could maybe have a woman on the show giving a female perspective.
Okay.
Oh, well, that would be a good idea, but I mean, it's...
I'm sure we can find Wonder Woman.
Yeah. The podcast is about guys talking about romance.
Right.
We know Wonder Woman fans. We can find some.
Well, not just Wonder Woman. Any female perspective.
We know Wonder Woman.
Herself. Yeah. Linda Carter will be on the show.
What? Linda Carter?
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman!
Oh, man. Mm. I'm going to wear my fancy pants.
I'm going to finally wear pants.
I'm not going to show up. I'm too intimidated. But if we do have a female perspective, I'll put it right here.
If you're going to put superheroes in relationships, it should show like a vulnerable side to them. But if you put two like super alpha people together, I don't feel like there's much vulnerability there. It feels like they're just too strong together. It kind of feels pointless to me. Like they're an obvious pairing, obviously. I mean, look at them. But I feel like it's too obvious that it's not really interesting.
But what's the need to make this super couple, like America's Sweethearts?
That's what I feel. I feel like America's Sweethearts. They would win, like, king and queen at the prom.
But they're so boring. If you put them on paper, in my mind, they're boring.
Mm-hmm.
I see boring.
They're always on paper.
But they're
just not really complimenting themselves like their other counterparts do. I think like Lois Lane compliments way more Superman than just putting two similar strengths people together.
It does annoy me that Wonder Woman was taken away from a couple where she was the stronger counterpart, which I think reflects her kind of attitude and her kind of not necessarily that she wants to be stronger, but then that she can be stronger and that's not a problem.
And he's not intimidated by it.
Exactly.
He doesn't feel threatened. He's comfortable with his own
masculinity.
Yes.
What about Lois?
Exactly.
What about Lois?
I like Lois a lot, so I feel like this is just sad, to be honest. Like, it's just sad. Like, she's a fun character. That she doesn't have to be... I don't think she's intimidated by Superman either, which she could be. Like, I think they both, in each other's couples, kind of accept them for who they are, and they see them as like, wow, you're very impressive, obviously. I mean, I don't think you can avoid that. But they see themselves as being still important.
Well, they bring a certain humanity to these superpowered characters, so it sort of grounds them to balance them out, because they are so powerful, it's insane. So you need that counterbalanced with something that's more...
It comes back to the vulnerability and showing the vulnerability in the superhero and the human aspect, if you will, of the superhero. Like, that they are able to be part of this world and part of something that's grounded.
Yeah, they're not just a superhero, they're still...
A person.
A person that's sensitive and have other issues and vulnerabilities.
Female perspective by 2/3 of the Legion of Superbloggers Hot or Not team, including Havana Nights, Lip Balm, Art Girl, and DJ Nut.
See,
that was enlightening. See,
wow. Brilliant.
Hopefully,
compelling
this
and
that
rich.
Wasn't dead air. Hopefully, that wasn't dead air. But I did tell them that I was working on a female version of this.
Yeah.
Podcast, more or less, an all-female plus Siskoid project.
Right.
So because be interested in that.
The original point of this podcast, and I think it's still the point of this podcast, is to have a male perspective on these romance comics and a male perspective today. And, you know, I don't want to speak for anyone in the room besides myself. I think we might identify at least very towards feminist ideals.
Oh, yeah,
I myself
absolutely.
Don't call myself a feminist because I don't think I'm that smart.
Well, I would, because I am.
I'm kind of a knuckle-dragging goon. I just, you know, yeah, sure, empowerment, ladies, great, that's great. I'm good to point out things that fart. That's just me.
Well, I was raised in a matriarchy.
Exactly.
So, obviously, you know, I'm a feminist.
I was raised by a single mother, so, yeah.
I studied history, so...
So?
Yeah. You have to, I mean...
Right.
You study history, and you're like, oh, shit. It was really shitty for women for a long time, still today.
Yeah. And we do realize that the male perspective is not a minority point.
No.
But
I mean, it's not like, it's about time men
need a voice.
Talked about things.
It's about time that white,
white straight men aged 18 to 45. It's time we took control.
We realize this.
Yeah.
But on this topic,
right.
Men do not necessarily take an interest.
Exactly.
So that's what we're trying to do.
I mean, I think the ladies are welcome to call bullshit on us anytime they want.
Definitely.
And they do.
Please.
These do. But the other things that they've said, supporters of the Fomance, which that's what they call the Superman Wonder Woman thing.
Yeah.
Supporters of Fomance are in the belief that relationship sells millions, but obviously it doesn't. There's no
proof
of
it.
No, actually there's proof of the opposite where they note that the Superman Wonder Woman comic book where they're together sells even fewer copies than Action Comics, which right now is not selling very well at all.
Yeah. Wow.
Have they noticed a decline of sales month over month over month for the Superman Wonder Woman?
That's usually how it works.
Right.
It's never been a strong seller. DC is having
trouble right now.
DC is having trouble. But I think Marty hit that nail on the head pretty hard in that podcast when he said, you know, it's a relationship, but it's based on color of their costumes and superpowers. Yeah. I mean, it's not even a relationship.
I just don't get why writers would go for that point. Like
that might be because you have a choice. You can work on this Superman Wonder Woman comic, have your name out there, and for regardless of what it is, you're going to get good PR, you're going to get good standing in the comics community. Or you can take your things and leave. We got 15 other people who are willing to do this Superman Wonder Woman for like half of what you're
and by
getting.
15 other people we mean Scott Lobdell. Okay. he's the company stooge.
Right.
Veronica, that same Veronica on our blog had a super point I thought about Wonder Woman where she says that Diana is supposed to be her own hero and have her own love interest. He's named Steve Trevor. She doesn't care for big muscles or power, only the personality. While Superman has a good personality, it's too much like her and he is more powerful than her, and that should be a big turnoff. And then she says Marston, which is the creator of Wonder Woman, created Steve so he could be a normal man that dates a powerful woman and just not care that she is stronger than him because he's secure in his manhood.
Yeah.
So he appreciates a woman that's stronger than him and isn't threatened by that.
Right.
And I thought that was an excellent point.
Yeah, it is an excellent because point.
You give Wonder Woman a weaker, quote-unquote, love interest who doesn't mind that she's a stronger woman. That's a healthy feminist statement.
Yeah.
A healthy relationship.
Is the fact that they match up Wonder Woman and Superman so much a weird, ingrained sexist ideal of
suddenly
woman can't be stronger.
It's like very classic. He's the only man that can dominate her.
Yeah exactly.
I never thought about that.
It feels very classic relationship where the man is obviously better, more secure, stable, etc., and she's just there along for the ride. And
that then shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. It
shouldn't be a norm in 2015.
It's not like it's not like Steve Trevor. It's not like he's a wimp. He's like a strong man. He's he's not threatened by a lady.
Look at Clark Kent. He's a wimp. Lois is whipping that guy around. I think that's what he wants. He's like, Lois is going to take care.
But if his relationship is when he's Superman, not when he's Clark, then he is the dominant character in his relationship instead of being, so it undoes everything that past writers have tried to do. It's like they don't understand that relationship or any of those
dynamics. If you have a rich history and you don't use it, it's just
That's DC Comics.
And I think in this case, that relationship, like we talk about how, this affects Wonder Woman. It also ruins Superman as well.
It does.
I mean, it affects both characters equally of where, it's, Superman kind of settling down and Wonder Woman trading up or, it's... It cheapens both characters.
The other lady here, Zoraida, well, she takes issue with us.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yep. Good. On the blog, on the there was a back and forth on the blog, and I mean it's all very amicable.
Okay.
But she says, I honestly think you guys could have handled this better.
Okay.
I didn't mind the vocabulary used to describe things during the show, but honestly, sometimes the words we use discussing specific topics can lead to sexism, as it happened here. I truly believe people can discuss mature contexts or specific topics without submitting women to the constant crap of which the vagina is more worth it than anything else. So the idea, I think, well, I mean, I'm going to paraphrase here because it's quite a long statement, but the idea that we talk, I say we, I mean you guys.
already disassociating
yourself.
I am guiltless
of this. And I listened back to the podcast to make sure, what did she mean? And, you know, And there was talk of banging and fucking and screwing. Yeah. And so we talked about the relationships in that context.
Okay.
So I sort of feel like we walked in on a conversation that was already going on, where they'd already decided, their thought was more advanced already on this, where the idea of even discussing sex in this context, where it wasn't really about why Superman or Wonder Woman would love another person, but why would they would screw another person.
Okay.
So
okay.
Discussing in sexual terms basically brought it back to something that's been done to death already, which is making the woman a sex object.
Right. Okay.
I think that was the point.
Right.
Although when I listened back, I thought, well, very often we're going, is that what DC's thinking? Is there a guy at DC going, Superman can only screw Wonder Woman?
That's my thought, because it seems to be a weird comic fan guy thing where you're always curious about sex between superheroes.
Yeah.
You see in the Kevin Smith films, or
what's
the thing's penis like? Or who can Superman fuck without his sperm piercing through the woman's body? Yeah. It's like, why? Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care if Superman can fuck people.
That's what the stories are about. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's also a trope of whenever a comic book wants to, you know, ramp up being a bit more edgy or more adult, well, let's put in a mature situation. Well, they're going to have sex, or, you know, there's...
Well, it's understandable because sex is a mature thing.
And I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's their go-to, you know, well, we need to kind of spice it up immediately.
DC is often, like... What's edgy? That's rape a character.
Yeah, you know, torsos and fridges as
like
an example. I don't think that in our previous podcast that we were kind of reinforcing that. We were kind of bringing this to light and going, you know, hey.
And they agree.
Okay.
But that
we still fell into it.
We still talk about it. We're still reinforcing that stereotype, if you will. We're still talking about women as vaginas.
Yeah. Okay. Even if we're mocking it, we're still
we're mocking
about
it, but we're mentioning it.
Okay. Oh well, that's all good.
Their feeling was that debate had already, we hadn't talked about it, but obviously.
To be fair, it's not our debate. I mean, we just use the language we use because it's all our second language.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They just Zoraida here wished that we'd talked more about why Lois is a good partner for Superman. That we talked about her personality, or courage, or compassion, or eagerness to find the truth. Why a godlike superhero would fall head over heels in love with her. And we did talk about that, but she wished we'd focus more on this. And I agree.
We focus too much on Superman, not the ladies.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe we should
Probably because it's the male perspective, and we identify with Superman more easily.
At one point put some of those Lois Lane reporter comics that we can read, because I'm pretty sure there's a romance angle in there, or just you know.
There's entrap someone in a marriage.
Will Superman marry? Lois Lane.
Right.
That
don't worry,
Linda Fish Girl or whatever.
We'll talk about Superman and Lois Lane a lot more. I'm sure.
Sure that'll come up. And there was a very long discussion, which you can find on lonelyheartspodcast.wordpress.com for episode 2, because we really did go back and forth on these issues. And,
cool.
So it's interesting.
Well, it's nice of them ladies to listen to us.
Here's another comment from one of the blogs. Okay. Ryan Daly, Count Druncula, who runs the Secret Origins podcast, and one of our strong supporters, said, well, first of all, he said, "You're releasing a new Lonely Hearts episode on the same day I release a 3-hour episode of Secret Origins. What are you trying to do, swipe my audience? No, Ryan, I'm pretty sure making your podcast 3 hours is the problem.
And yes, we are.
I can listen to the 3-hour one or
come at me,
the
scrub
50-minute one. You know, package your thoughts.
Wow, the call out. Wow.
And Mike does a lot of editing.
Yeah. Come at me, scrub lord. Do you even lift, bro?
But as if we had anywhere near Ryan's numbers.
No, we're not.
We love you, Ryan.
Yeah, we realize we're working in a very small niche. And then he also says, a great episode once again. I agree with the group's collective take on the Superman-Wonder Woman romance, in quotation marks. What do the characters get from that particular coupling other than presumably sex? See, you went there as well.
Yeah.
I never heard or seen any evidence that DC has an answer to that. Nothing about dating Superman makes Wonder Woman a better character. Nothing about dating Wonder Woman makes Superman a better character. Mm-hmm. There is not a single thing interesting or compelling about this romance, so why has DC been pushing for this in every out-of-continuity tale, Kingdom Come, The Dark Knight Strikes Again, Injustice Gods Among Us, and now in the main DC universe?
You know why?
And he also loved the miniskirt story.
You know why? You know why we always go to sex when it comes to Wonder Woman and
because
Superman?
Because we're men?
No,
because
it's the only thing we can see that brings them together.
Because they don't actually have something
in common.
Exactly.
Nothing in common.
And you know why writers always go for that? Because DC doesn't hire women writers.
It probably doesn't.
They used to.
They still do, but you know, it's far in between.
What's Gail Simone? She's still working for DC?
Yep.
Okay. She's still writing.
She's writing the Secret Six.
Was it Birds of Prey at one point?
That's a long time ago.
That's done.
I think we've already established that I'm not up to date on DC stuff.
She's still writing
Red
Sonja.
Red Sonja.
I love Red Sonja.
She takes like crappy comics and makes them better.
So she's the Lord and Miller
very,
of the comic,
very good.
Comic
She's
book
very,
world.
Very good. She's one of my favorites. Yep.
And then we have Jeff R., who's a frequent commenter on my own personal blog, so he commented on this as well. He said, so here's the thing. The Superman-Wonder Woman relationship idea can work, but it can only work in the context of a world where Lois Lane is dead and buried, probably along with the Clark Kent identity. A world where Superman is his primary identity. Obviously, Lois is the only option when Clark Kent is primary. When Kal-El is the primary identity, things are a bit of a mess, and he goes around wishing Kara wasn't a close blood relative, or for some reason that happened folks.
Yeah,
there's a lot of if you weren't my cousin actually.
Yeah.
No, that's not the problem. If kissing your cousin wasn't illegal on Krypton.
I hope they don't use that in a TV show.
Didn't they use it in the Supergirl movie?
Can you blame them? I mean, she's awesome.
So it's like Kal-El really wants to be with a Kryptonian, and
right.
Supergirl's the only Kryptonian because obviously he needs to ignore the hundreds of eligible Kandorian women inside the Kandor bottle.
What about Power Girl? Isn't she like a Kara clone?
That's still his cousin. Yeah. That's still a blood relative. Blood relative.
Yeah, clone. Okay.
She's not a clone. She's from Earth.
In any
too.
Case, we don't want Superman to end up with
Power
Girl. That's the same problem.
Yeah,
right.
From Diana's side, it doesn't really necessarily work, but it seems like the least bad option. Steve Trevor's always been a non-starter for Jeff. Even when you're doing a Nemesis, a slightly more interesting version of Trevor in the new 52 Trevor as a sort of Nemesis-y version of himself, because Wonder Woman went out with Nemesis for a while. Aquaman sort of works in contexts where Mira is dead or a long-term evil crazy, but the biggest problem with Wonder Woman is that her world is insufficiently integrated with the rest of the DCU, and adding in another insular, non-interactive corner of the universe doesn't really help. The best options tend to be other universes. Steve Rogers would really work, so we keep thinking of Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers would really work, I think, so might a non-evil version of Mr. Terrific 2, but Trevor won't work. No Time for Love, Wonder Woman doesn't work, and anyone from the Greek myth side would be a horrible idea. So he doesn't have any answers for Wonder Woman's love life.
General. What about, let's suggest, or I'm going to suggest, Batman of Zur-En-Arr.
Why would you?
Why not? Why Batman not? Of Zur-En-Arr is essentially Batman, but with Superman's powers, but he's still Batman.
Yeah. I think Jeff's wrong. I think Steve Trevor does work. They just haven't been writing Steve Trevor right.
Yeah. I think that's the thing.
They've been trying, they've been pushing him to the side on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they don't want him to be with Wonder Woman.
I think when he mentions that it would work with Superman if Lois Lane is dead and the Clark Kent personality is buried along with her, I think, unfortunately, that's true if we go with DC's way of doing things right now. Like, divorcing Superman from his alter ego, which technically Superman is his alter ego, his real personality is Clark Kent. If we destroy that and then just kind of make Superman the one person, yes, it works. It's kind of a, well, we're making a best of a bad situation. We're just making it slightly less bad. But it's still drastic measures of this one character. We have to kill off the one person that actually goes well with them to make this flawed relationship work. It's not worth it. Like Aquaman losing Mera or whatever. No, because Aquaman, well, Mike, you're a super fan of Aquaman. My version is more the Brave and the Bold, outrageous guy.
That's fine.
Yeah. And his Mera works very well with him. They complement each other.
Well, here's the thing. If you divorce a character from anyone in their supporting cast.
Right.
Okay. You're basically killing off that character. You're pushing the character aside. Maybe he or she isn't dead, but you know, they're out of it.
Right.
That's the same weird impulse where they kill characters.
Yeah.
You know, to make a big splash, let's kill a character.
Right.
Why would you kill off I don't agree with killing off characters because then you've deprived yourself of a resource.
Yeah.
So long as a character lives, you can write stories for them. If the character is not being written well right now, he can be forgotten. And then somebody can bring them back without, you know, too much
like
fuss.
Like Spider-Man did that for a while. In Superhero Spider-Man. I don't think they wanted to use Mary Jane, so they kind of just like, she owns a nightclub now. She's her own thing. She kind of was
in
the background. She was still around. They didn't kill her, thank God. But then when, you know, they want to use her again, she comes back.
Yeah.
Thing is,
it's fine.
With these characters, except for Steve, like Lois Lane, you don't have to kill her off.
No.
She's fine by herself. She doesn't need Superman
around.
She's
had her own series.
And that's why Superman's attracted to her. Because she doesn't need him around.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't... Well, I mean, she likes him, but if she didn't like him, she'd be go screw yourself, Superman.
I don't even believe in the idea of Superman without Clark Kent. Why would Superman want a relationship with anyone?
He'd want that as Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah, not as Superman.
Clark Kent, and it's the same thing. If you kill off Clark Kent, which they've done now.
Yeah.
Clark Kent is... he's been revealed to the world.
He's been outed,
He's been outed by Lois in an issue where they say, it's nice just to be friends, right? They're really killing that the love relationship. Well, more or less, because friends can fall in love. Or you know, eventually...
Can they really?
Well, not in real life. But, you know, in the comic, they could... Because something could blossom. I think they're setting themselves up for a re-blossoming... They kill Clark Kent. That's a lot of stories you can't tell anymore.
Yeah.
That's what it means when you remove something.
Yeah.
Especially if, and it's always suspect when it comes with a press release. Because the outing, we already knew he'd be outed.
Yeah.
That was like released, like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not just a solicitation in previews or whatever people read now to find out what's going to come out in 4 months. It came out with a press release.
Right.
We're trying to get on Newsweek or on Entertainment Weekly.
Like when they killed off Captain America. It was like, 50th anniversary of Captain America, and we're going to kill him off, and he's going to die, and he's never going to come back alive.
And that's always suspect, because if the company sends us a press release, it's about the news. It's not about the story. Because if it was about the story, they'd wait for us to read the story and be shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not shocked. We're shocked by the press release. A lot of people tweet and Facebook about it and write about it beforehand just to sell more comics.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So it's just a sales gimmick. Mm-hmm. So Superman, they killed Clark Kent because that's shocking.
That's what I feel when they do Superman Wonder Woman. Like, on the cover, it's Superman Wonder Woman hugging or whatever.
Yeah.
And people are like, huh.
Shocker.
And pick it up.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that doesn't seem to have worked.
No.
Honestly, they need to pick it up on the writing.
If something's bad about a comic, 90% chance it's the writer.
Or the editor.
The editor.
Yeah.
Messages that came in after we recorded. There's Rob Kelly from the Aquaman Shrine and the Fire and Water podcast. He says he's enjoying the new podcast. We got off to a good start with episode 1. Opening with a clip from Before Sunrise, his all-time favorite movie, was a good move. Fun show so far. Thanks, Rob. You're one of the fathers of us all. On Twitter, Dr. Geniodologist pointed us in the direction of a story that's reprinted in Weird Love number 1 and said this would be fodder for the new podcast. We agree, of course. And Michael Babelplund also asked about Weird Love and recommended a story that we were already planning to take on, so I think we're on the same wavelength. Facebook likes and shares from Isabelle Godin, Mike Arsenault, Nathalie Gauguin, Amélie Montour, José Robichaud, Keith G. Baker, Sam Lowe, Nathan Dimitrov, Anthony Durso, and Brad Millett, and further Twitter retweets and favorites from The Roost, Firestorm Fan, Maidley, Ange, Keith Mason, The Hammer Strikes, that's Gene Hendricks, Comics Blitz, Martin Gray, Laura, and Tej K. Thanks, everyone.
Leave a comment on the blog at lonelyheartspodcast.wordpress.com or on iTunes or on Facebook. The page is Lonely Hearts Romance Comics Podcast. Or on Twitter, I'm Siskoid, Fern is Idiot Brigadier, Bass is Revue_Bass, REVUE_BASS, and Marty is Marty Light. The views expressed on this podcast belong solely to the speaker. All music, audio clips, and images are used for entertainment purposes only and are believed covered under fair use. We don't make any money off this program, so no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks for listening, dear Lonely Hearts, and until next time, all our love.
Here's to the losers. Here's to the losers. Bless them all.
He's comfortable with his own masculinity. With his own masculinity.
Masculinity.
Masculinity. Masculinity.
There's too much pressure now.
Masculinity. No.
Linity.
Masculinity. Masculinity. No.